Somebody called and said, did Jesus know Judas would betray him when he chose him? We're talking about the kerygma, as they put it in Greek, the self-limitation of Jesus. My answer has to be to that, no, but I'm going to go beyond and give an opinion and say, I don't even think God knew it. You see, God's knowledge is a function of his power. Because God is all-powerful, he can make things come out his way. Any other definition of God... No, let me pause long enough to put a parenthesis in. Paul Tillich said something very profound. He said it's almost as blasphemous to define God as it is to deny him. Because we are reaching up to a God so much bigger than our conceptual frame and our language tools to express it, that any definition of God, by its very nature, reduces God in size. Therefore, all definitions have to have that appendage of humility to it, that we see through a glass darkly, to borrow from Paul's phrases, then face to face. But having said that, the struggle to know, which is justified by Jesus' prayer, this is life eternal, that a man may know thee, the one true God, and Jesus Christ whom he has sent, legitimizes the humble effort to understand God and his nature. It is further justified by the fact that the incarnation is proof positive that God wanted to be known, and his entire word is a revelation of God. And with all those prefaces, my opinion is that God's power keeps him God. I've said that many, many times. It's Satan's tactic to exalt one of God's attributes and one of his functions in relationship and deify the function, which also becomes blasphemous because we take our experiential or preferred understanding of God's nature and reduce him down to that. You can't reduce God to our little boxes. God is love. That's a function of God. But without power, he wouldn't be around to be loving. There was war in heaven. God's power prevailed. He didn't win against Satan by loving Satan. Jesus said, I beheld Satan cast down. Now, the biblical definition of God starts with power. And I might tell you something. You probably are closer in on the acid test of godlikeness by the way you use power. If God, who is responsible for the placement of all men, and that's what Romans 13 says, there's probably no greater challenge to godliness than the use of power, because there you are in a delegated position, God having delegated power. And few men can use it with the grace that God uses power. But God's definition begins with an all-powerful being. Now, I'm a Christian personalist in philosophy. I believe that ultimate reality is personal. That can't be proven. That's a faith assumption. And that the ultimate person, God, had no beginning but always was. That cannot be proven. For years, people tried to argue that one of the greatest proofs of God is that there has to be a first cause. There does not have to be a first cause. That is an emotional choice made based upon temperament, background, training, and a myriad number of psychological impetus. It is no more logical to believe in a first cause than to believe in infinite regression. or perpetual motion. God always was. There was an ultimate personal being. That's why I believe in Revelation and look for it and find it in the stars, find it in the pyramid, and find it in God's chosen relationship with the people he calls his oracle people who got his attention because of their faith. And because he liked that trusting faith in Abram, he chose a people, and once he gave his word to him, he kept it. And the ultimate revelation of God is when the substance or hypostasis of God himself steps on the stage of history and struck a tent in human flesh to show forth the glory of God in human flesh. He's going to reveal himself. But of all matters revealed about God, the one that keeps him on the throne, power. God is all powerful. The phrases omniscience, omnipotence, omnipresence are jaw-breaking theological concepts developed primarily by German idealists. In the theological outpourings of the mid-18th century, 19th century, 1800s. These concepts are memorized and regurgitated in seminaries without philosophic analysis. And many of them are mutually contradictory. Now, if you want to choose paradoxically to believe God can be mutually contradictory, have at it. He's beyond our concept. But if you're going to use human reason in any manner at all to elaborate on a knowledge of God, omniscience becomes the fruit of God's power. He can know what he wants to know, and he can make things happen the way he wants them to happen. Now, the church world has been divided for centuries between the predestinarians, and out of the predestinarians come the Presbyterians, the Baptists, the Calvinists of all kinds, and the Arminians, as they're called, the free will people, on the other end. They fight to the theological death because they lack Paul Tillich's humility to recognize we can't box God in, and we are like blind men running into various extensions of an elephant, describing him by what we encounter. And the Calvinists believe that God has predestined everything. And like the Presbyterian seminary student who stumbled over a step and said, thank God that one's behind me, everything is wound up to come out. Now, there are extremes. It's an oversimplification to put all Presbyterians, all Calvinists, all Baptists into the predestined camp and describe them in one sentence. But to varying degrees, they are swinging the pendulum to the extreme where God predetermines every event. Therefore, it's got to happen that way. The Arminian camp swing it to the other extreme and give a lot of play, freedom. The error on both sides is their exclusiveness. You can only understand God's doing if you realize we more or less look horizontal on a line. And over here is the control factor, predestined. And over here is the free factor, random. And man looking horizontally is forever at war over this. The facts are, you'll never make sense until you put God into the scene and recognize that he has the freedom to hit this continuum at any point he wants to hit it. Paul, God totally stacked the deck on him, and you have the evidence there of God's control. That's Paul. Saul, who became Paul. Thomas, he let him flounder around a little bit with his doubts. God can work along this. He can exercise as much control as he wants, like tightening the transmission, or he can loosen it up. And he does that. And the Bible is the record of God's action. So if you set out with an arrogant view that you can box God in, you can go through the Scripture, which is a record of God's action, and pick the illustrations on the control side of the continuum, and you've proved your point and abolished the Arminians. Or you can go through the same record and pick the random appearing happenings, as they would call it, random appearing, as the free people would say, the actual random happenings, where God seems to withdraw his presence, and the argument is fixed. And then the control people, and that may be a wrong choice of word, because I like to preach on God's control in a different sense, will say, well, God's hiding himself, but he's still got this transmission and this engine all grooved. Your a priori philosophic position determines the choice. I am totally convinced, with Reinhold Niebuhr, who opened my eyes to this more than anyone else, that God in his power chose to turn loose freedom. Without freedom, no love. But because of freedom, sin. Because without freedom, there's no sin. Without freedom, there's no love. Freedom is the introduction of the random factor in human behavior. You drop that island in the middle of the Atlantic, as I believe happened with the disappearance of Atlantis, which I happen to believe in. And you got those birds that fly by instinct until they're exhausted and drop in the ocean. You got the eels that swim from the seaweed sea all the way to Europe, those freshwater eels, and fight the Gulf Stream to get back to breed in that seaweed sea. They're driven by instinct. The random factor is not there. But with man, God turned loose that measure of freedom until every conscious act of man is affected to some degree by the random intrusion of our free will. And God has the ability to reduce how much of it by stacking the deck on us or giving more play. But there is simply no act of man that doesn't have introduced the random factor. Now that's my view. That's God's choice. Therefore, omniscience, all-knowingness, is the product of his power. He can make it go his way. He can tighten the screws. He can so stack the deck, he drives you down a channel. But because he turned freedom loose, God is forced into being an ever-present reconstructionist. Instead of winding us up like a clock where our life must take a certain path, and if we miss God's will at one point, horrors, we forever miss God's will. It produces convoluted reasoning between the perfect will of God and the permissive will of God. There's only one will of God. That's to make us over in his image in response to a faith act. If we miss one intersection, he must reconstruct and give us, it takes him a while, and you'll never be in the same circumstance again. And what you might have done at one time, if you take the wrong turn, cannot be duplicated. But God enters into all things to work his will to them which are the called according to his purpose, and he is forever reconstructing, which makes him a perennially creating God. He must constantly rearrange and recreate the circumstance that those that are the children of his will, who by faith have been adopted into the family in response to their faith action, are given new beginnings to start over. Now, in that frame, I do not believe that Judas was chosen with the knowledge that he would fail. I believe that God's will predetermined that one of the 12 had to fail. That means when the 12 were picked, the risk factor was on all of them. And as the pressure is tightened, the weakest one of the lot, the most corrupt by nature and consistent pattern of the lot, is going to fall. And when the pressure tightened to the hour, Jesus had to conclude that Judas was the one saying, you were son of the devil from the beginning. I don't believe he was chosen with the knowledge. I believe the pressure was on the 12. If God had predetermined that one of the 3 would fall, then the pressure would have been on three. That's my view of it.